The Galactic Empire itself could do it. The mule did it.
Exactly.
And he was beyond calculation. And you are not. What is worse, the people know that you are not. So your ships go into battle fearing defeat in some unknown way. The insubstantial fabric of the plan hangs over them so that they are cautious and look before they attack and wonder a little too much. While on the other side, that same insubstantial fabric fills the enemy with confidence, removes fear, maintains morale in the face of early defeats. Why not? The Foundation has always been defeated at first and has always won in the end. And your own morale, sir? You stand everywhere on enemy territory. Your own dominions have not been invaded, are still not in danger of invasion. Yet, you are defeated. You don't believe in the possibility even of victory because you know there is none. Stoop, then, or you will be beaten to your knees. Stoop voluntarily and you may save a remnant. You have depended on metal and power, and they have sustained you as far as they could. You have ignored mind and morale, and they have failed you. Now take my advice. You have the Foundation man, Homer Munn. Release him. Send him back to Terminus, and he will carry your peace offers. Stetton's teeth ground behind his pale, set lips. But what choice had he? On the eighth day of the new year, Homer Munn left Calgan again. More than 6 months had passed since he had left Terminus, and in the interim, a war had raged and reached its climax. He had come alone, but he left escorted. He had come a simple man of private life. He left the unappointed but nevertheless actual ambassador of peace. And what had most changed was his early concern over the Second Foundation. He laughed at the thought of that, and pictured in luxuriant detail the final revelation to Dr. Durrell, to that energetic, young, competent Anthor, to all of them. He knew. He, Homer Munn, finally knew the truth. Chapter 20. I Know. The final 2 months of the Calganian War did not lag for Homer. In his unusual office as mediator extraordinary, he found himself the center of interstellar affairs, a role he could not help but find pleasing. There were no further major battles. A few accidental skirmishes that could scarcely count, and the terms of the treaty were hammered out with little necessity for concessions on the part of the Foundation. Stettin retained his office, but scarcely anything else. His navy was dismantled, his possessions outside the home system itself made autonomous and allowed to vote for a return to previous status. Full independence, or confederation within the Foundation, as they chose. The war was formally ended on an asteroid in Terminus's own stellar system, site of the Foundation's oldest naval base. Lev Maris signed for Calgan, and Homer was an interested spectator. Throughout all that period, he did not see Dr. Durrell nor any of the others. But it scarcely mattered. His news would keep. And, as always, he smiled at the thought. Dr. Durrell returned to Terminus some weeks after VK Day, 62-377. And that same evening his house served as the meeting place for the five men who, 10 months earlier, had laid their first plans. They lingered over dinner and then over wine, as though hesitating to return again to the old subject. It was Joel Turbor, who, peering steadily into the purple depths of the wine glass with one eye, muttered rather than said, "Well, Homer, you are a man of affairs now, I see. You handled matters well."
"I?"
Munn laughed loudly and joyously. For some reason, he had not stuttered in months. "I hadn't a thing to do with it. It was Arcadia. By the by, Darrell, how is she?" "She's coming back from Trantor, I heard."
"You heard correctly," said Darrell quietly.
"Her ship should dock within the week." He looked with veiled eyes at the others, but there were only confused, amorphous exclamations of pleasure. Nothing else.
Turbor said, "Then it's over, really. Who would have predicted all this last spring? Munn's been to Calgan and back. Arcadia's been to Calgan and Trantor and is coming back. We've had a war and won it, by space. They tell you that the vast sweeps of history can be predicted, but doesn't it seem conceivable that all that has just happened, with its absolute confusion to those of us who lived through it, couldn't possibly have predicted?"
"Nonsense," said Anthor acidly. "What makes you so triumphant anyway? You talk as though we have really won a war, when actually we have won nothing but a petty brawl which has served only to distract our minds from the real enemy." There was an uncomfortable silence, in which only Homer Munn's slight smile struck a discordant note. And Anthor struck the arm of his chair with a bald and fury-filled fist. "Yes, I refer to the Second Foundation. There is no mention of it, and, if I judge correctly, every effort to have no thought of it. Is it because the fallacious atmosphere of victory that palls over this world of idiots is so attractive that you feel you must participate? Turn somersaults, then. Handspring your way into a wall. Pound one another's back and throw confetti out the window. Do whatever you please, only get it out of your system. And when you are quite done, and you are yourselves again, return and let us discuss that problem which exists now precisely as it did last spring, when you sat here with eyes cocked over your shoulders for fear of you knew not what. Do you really think that the mind masters of the Second Foundation are less to be feared because you have beat down a foolish wielder of spaceships?" He paused, red-faced and panting. Munn said quietly, "Will you hear me speak now, Anthor? Or do you prefer to continue your role as ranting conspirator?"
"Have your say, Homer," said Darrell, "but let all of us refrain from over-picturesqueness of language. It's a very good thing in its place, but at present it bores me."
Homer Munn leaned back in his armchair and carefully refilled his glass from the decanter at his elbow. "I was sent to Calgan," he said, "to find out what I could from the records contained in the Mule's palace. I spent several months doing so. I seek no credit for that accomplishment. As I have indicated, it was Arcadia whose ingenuous intermeddling obtained the entry for me. Nevertheless, the fact remains that, to my original knowledge of the Mule's life and times, which I submit was not small, I have added the fruits of much labor among primary evidence, which has been available to no one else. I am, therefore, in a unique position to estimate the true danger of the Second Foundation, much more so than is our excitable friend here."
"And," grated Anthor, "what is your estimate of that danger?"
"Why, zero." A short pause, and Elvet Semek asked with an air of surprised disbelief,
"You mean zero danger?"
"Certainly. Friends, there is no Second Foundation." Anthor's eyelids closed slowly, and he sat there, face pale and expressionless. Munn continued, attention-centering and loving it. And what is more, there was never one.
On what, asked Durrell, do you base this surprising conclusion?
I deny, said Munn, that it is surprising. You all know the story of the mule's search for the second foundation, but what do you know of the intensity of that search, of the single-mindedness of it? He had tremendous resources at his disposal, and he spared none of it. He was single-minded, and yet he failed. No second foundation was found.
One could scarcely expect it to be found, pointed out Turbor restlessly. It had means of protecting itself against inquiring minds.
Even when the mind that is inquiring is the mule's mutant mentality, I think not. But come, you do not expect me to give you the gist of 50 volumes of reports in 5 minutes. All of it, by the terms of the peace treaty, will be part of the Selden Historical Museum eventually, and you will all be free to be as leisurely in your analysis as I have been. You will find his conclusion plainly stated, however, and that I have already expressed. There is not, and has never been, any second foundation.
Semek interposed, Well, what stopped the mule, then?
Great galaxy, what do you suppose stopped him?
Death did, as it will stop all of us.
The greatest superstition of the age is that the mule was somehow stopped in an all-conquering career by some mysterious entities superior even to himself. It is the result of looking at everything in wrong focus. Certainly no one in the galaxy can help knowing that the mule was a freak, physical as well as mental. He died in his 30s because his ill-adjusted body could no longer struggle its creaking machinery along. For several years before his death, he was an invalid. His best health was never more than an ordinary man's feebleness.
All right, then.
He conquered the galaxy and, in the ordinary course of nature, proceeded to die. It's a wonder he proceeded as long and as well as he did. Friends, it's down in the very clearest print. You have only to have patience. You have only to try to look at all facts in new focus.
Durrell said thoughtfully, Good. Let us try that, Munn. It would be an interesting attempt, and if nothing else, would help oil our thoughts. These tampered men, the records of which Anthor brought to us nearly a year ago, what of them? Help us to see them in focus.
Easily. How old a science is encephalographic analysis? Or, put it another way, how well developed is the study of neuronic pathways?
We are beginning in this respect. Granted, said Durrell.
Right. How certain can we be, then, as to the interpretation of what I've heard Anthor and yourself call the tamper plateau? You have your theories, but how certain can you be? Certain enough to consider it a firm basis for the existence of a mighty force for which all other evidence is negative? It's always easy to explain the unknown by postulating a superhuman and arbitrary will. It's a very human phenomenon. There have been cases all through galactic history where isolated planetary systems have reverted to savagery, and what have we learned there? In every case, such savages attribute the to them incomprehensible forces of nature, storms, pestilences, droughts, to sentient beings more powerful and more arbitrary than men. It is called anthropomorphism, I believe, and in this respect, we are savages and indulge in it. Knowing little of mental science, we blame anything we don't know on supermen. Those of the second foundation in this case, based on the hint thrown us by Selden.
Oh, broke in Anthor, then you do remember Selden. I thought you had forgotten.
Selden did say there was a second foundation. Get that in focus. And are you aware, then, of all Selden's purposes? Do you know what necessities were involved in his calculations? The second foundation may have been a very necessary scarecrow with a highly specific end in view. How did we defeat Calgan, for instance? What were you saying in your last series of articles, Turbor? Turbor stirred his bulk.
Yes, I see what you're driving at.
I was on Calgan toward the end, Durrell, and it was quite obvious that morale on the planet was incredibly bad. I looked through their news records and, well, they expected to be beaten. Actually, they were completely unmanned by the thought that eventually the Second Foundation would take a hand on the side of the First, naturally. Quite right, said Mun. I was there all through the war. I told Stettin there was no Second Foundation, and he believed me. He felt safe. But there was no way of making the people suddenly disbelieve what they had believed all their lives, so that the myth eventually served a very useful purpose in Selden's cosmic chess game. But Anthor's eyes opened quite suddenly and fixed themselves sardonically on Mun's countenance. I say you lie. Homer turned pale. I don't see that I have to accept, much less answer, an accusation of that nature. I say it without any intention of personal offense. You cannot help lying. You don't realize that you are. But you lie, just the same. Semek laid his withered hand on the young man's sleeve. Take a breath, young fella. Anthor shook him off none too gently and said, I'm out of patience with all of you. I haven't seen this man more than half a dozen times in my life, yet I find the change in him unbelievable. The rest of you have known him for years, yet pass it by. It is enough to drive one mad. Do you call this man you've been listening to Homer Mun? He is not the Homer Mun I knew. A medley of shock, above which Mun's voice cried, You claim me to be an impostor? Perhaps not in the ordinary sense, shouted Anthor above the din, but an impostor nonetheless. Quiet, everyone. I demand to be heard. He frowned them ferociously into obedience. Do any of you remember Homer Mun as I do? The introverted librarian who never talked without obvious embarrassment, the man of tense and nervous voice who stuttered out his uncertain sentences? Does this man sound like him? He's fluent, he's confident, he's full of theories, and by space he doesn't stutter. Is he the same person? Even Mun looked confused, and Peleus Anthor drove on. Well, shall we test him? How? Asked Durrell. You ask how? There is the obvious way. You have his encephalographic record of 10 months ago, haven't you? Run one again and compare. He pointed at the frowning librarian and said violently, I dare him to refuse to subject himself to analysis. I don't object, said Mun defiantly. I am the man I always was. Can you know? Said Anthor with contempt. I'll go further. I trust no one here. I want everyone to undergo analysis. There has been a war. Mun has been on Calgan. Turbor has been on board ship and all over the war areas. Durrell and Semek have been absent, too. I have no idea where. Only I have remained here in seclusion and safety, and I no longer trust any of the rest of you. And to play fair, I'll submit to testing as well. Are we agreed, then? Or do I leave now and go my own way? Turbor shrugged and said, I have no objection. I have already said I don't, said Mun. Semek moved a hand in silent assent, and Anthor waited for Durell. Finally, Durell nodded his head. Take me first, said Anthor. The needles traced their delicate way across the cross-hatchings as the young neurologist sat frozen in the reclining seat, with lidded eyes brooding heavily. From the files, Durell removed the folder containing Anthor's old encephalographic record. He showed them to Anthor. That's your own signature, isn't it? Yes, yes, it's my record. Make the comparison. The scanner threw old and new onto the screen. All six curves in each recording were there, and in the darkness, Mun's voice sounded in harsh clarity. Well now, look there. There's a change. Those are the primary waves of the frontal lobe. It doesn't mean a thing, Homer. Those additional jags you're pointing to are just anger. It's the others that count. He touched a control knob, and the six pairs melted into one another and coincided. The deeper amplitude of primaries alone introduced doubling. Satisfied? Asked Anthor. Durell nodded curtly and took the seat himself. Semek followed him, and Turbor followed him. Silently, the curves were collected. Silently, they were compared. Mun was the last to take his seat. For a moment, he hesitated. Then, with a touch of desperation in his voice, he said, Well, now, look. I'm coming in last, and I'm under tension. I expect due allowance to be made for that. There will be, Durell assured him. No conscious emotion of yours will affect more than the primaries, and they are not important. It might have been hours in the utter silence that followed. And then, in the darkness of the comparison, Anthor said huskily, Sure, sure, it's only the onset of a complex. Isn't that what he told us? No such thing as tampering? It's all a silly, anthropomorphic notion? But look at it. A coincidence, I suppose. What's the matter? Shrieked Mun. Durell's hand was tight on the librarian's shoulder. Quiet, Mun. You've been handled. You've been adjusted by them. Then the light went on, and Mun was looking about him with broken eyes, making a horrible attempt to smile. You can't be serious, surely? There is a purpose to this. You are testing me. But Durell only shook his head. No, no, Homer. It's true. The librarian's eyes were filled with tears suddenly. I don't feel any different. I can't believe it. With sudden conviction, you are all in this. It's a conspiracy. Durell attempted a soothing gesture and his hand was struck aside. Mun snarled, You're planning to kill me. By space, you're planning to kill me. With a lunge, Anthor was upon him. There was the sharp crack of bone against bone, and Homer was limp and flaccid with that look of fear frozen on his face. Anthor rose shakily and said, We'd better tie and gag him. Later, we can decide what to do. He brushed his long hair back. Turbor said, How did you guess there was something wrong with him? Anthor turned sardonically upon him. It wasn't difficult. You see, I happen to know where the second foundation really is. Successive shocks have a decreasing effect. It was with actual mildness that Semek asked, Are you sure? I mean, we've just gone through this sort of business with Mun. This isn't quite the same, returned Anthor. Durell, the day the war started, I spoke to you most seriously. I tried to have you leave Terminus. I would have told you then what I will tell you now if I had been able to trust you. You mean you have known the answer for half a year? Smiled Durell. I have known it from the time I learned that Arcadia had left for Trantor. And Durell started to his feet in sudden consternation. What had Arcadia to do with it? What are you implying? Absolutely nothing that is not plain on the face of all the events we know so well. Arcadia goes to Calgan and flees in terror to the traditional center of the galaxy, rather than return home. Lieutenant Durridge, our best agent on Calgan, is tampered with. Homer Munn goes to Calgan, and he is tampered with. The Mule conquered the galaxy, but queerly enough, he made Calgan his headquarters. And it occurs to me to wonder if he was conqueror or, perhaps, tool. At every turn, we meet with Calgan. Calgan. Nothing but Calgan, the world that somehow survived untouched all the struggles of the warlords for over a century. Your conclusion, then, is obvious. Anthor's eyes were intense. The second foundation is on Calgan. Turbor interrupted.
I was on Calgan, Anthor. I was there last week. If there was any second foundation on it, I'm mad. Personally, I think you're mad.
The young man whirled on him savagely. Then you're a fat fool. What do you expect the second foundation to be? A grammar school? Do you think that radiant fields in tight beams spell out second foundation in green and purple along the incoming spaceship routes? Listen to me, Turbor. Wherever they are, they form a tight oligarchy. They must be as well hidden on the world on which they exist as the world itself is in the galaxy as a whole.
Turbor's jaw muscles writhed. I don't like your attitude, Anthor.
That certainly disturbs me, was the sarcastic response. Take a look about you here on Terminus. We're at the center, the core, the origin of the First Foundation with all its knowledge of physical science. Well, how many of the population are physical scientists? Can you operate an energy transmitting station? What do you know of the operation of a hypernuclear motor? Huh? The number of real scientists on Terminus, even on Terminus, can be numbered at less than 1% of the population. And what then of the second foundation where secrecy must be preserved? There will still be less of the cognoscenti, and these will be hidden even from their own world.
Say, said Semek carefully, we just licked Calgan.
So we did. So we did, said Anthor sardonically. Oh, we celebrate that victory. The cities are still illuminated. They are still shooting off fireworks. They are still shouting over the televisors. But now, when the search is on once more for the second foundation, where is the last place we'll look? Where is the last place anyone will look? Right? Calgan. We haven't hurt them, you know, not really. We've destroyed some ships, killed a few thousands, torn away their empire, taken over some of their commercial and economic power, but that all means nothing. I'll wager that not one member of the real ruling class of Calgan is in the least discomfited. On the contrary, they are now safe from curiosity. But not from my curiosity. What do you say, Durrell?
Durrell shrugged his shoulders. Interesting. I'm trying to fit it in with a message I received from Arcadia 2 months ago.
Oh, a message, asked Anthor.
And what was it?
Well, I'm not certain.
5 short words.
But it's interesting. Look, broke in Semek with a worried interest, there's something I don't understand.
What's that?
Semek chose his words carefully, his old upper lip lifting with each word as if to let them out singly and reluctantly.
Well, now, Homer Munn was saying just a while ago
that Harry Seldon was faking when he said that he had established a second foundation. Now you're saying that it's not so, that Seldon wasn't faking, eh?
Right. He wasn't faking.
Seldon said he had established a second foundation, and so he had.
All right, then.
But he said something else, too. He said he established the two foundations at opposite ends of the galaxy. Now, young man, was that a fake? Because Calgan isn't at the opposite end of the galaxy.
Anthor seemed annoyed.
That's a minor point. That part may well have been a cover-up to protect them. But after all, think. What real use would it serve to have the Mind Masters at the opposite end of the galaxy? What is their function? To help preserve the plan. Who are the main card players of the plan? We, the First Foundation. Where can they best observe us, then, and serve their own ends? At the opposite end of the galaxy? Ridiculous.
They're reasonably close, actually. And that is much more sensible.
I like that argument, said Durrell. It makes sense. Look here. Mun's been conscious for some time, and I propose we loose him. He can't do any harm, really.
Anthor looked rebellious, but Homer was nodding vigorously. 5 seconds later, he was rubbing his wrists just as vigorously.
How do you feel? Asked Durrell.
Rotten, said Mun, sulkily. But never mind. There's something I want to ask this bright young thing here. I've heard what he's had to say, and I'd just like permission to wonder what we do next.
There was a queer and incongruous silence.
Mun smiled bitterly.
Well, suppose Calgan is the second foundation. Who on Calgan are they? How are you going to find them? How are you going to tackle them if you find them, eh?
Ah, said Durrell, I can answer that, strangely enough. Shall I tell you what Semek and I have been doing this past half year? It may give you another reason, Anthor, why I was anxious to remain on Terminus all this time.
In the first place, he went on, I've been working on encephalographic analysis with more purpose than any of you may suspect. Detecting second foundation minds is a little more subtle than simply finding a tamper plateau, and I did not actually succeed. But I came close enough. Do you know, any of you, how emotional control works? It's been a popular subject with fiction writers since the time of the Mule, and much nonsense has been written, spoken, and recorded about it. For the most part, it has been treated as something mysterious and occult. Of course, it isn't. That the brain is the source of a myriad tiny electromagnetic fields, everyone knows. Every fleeting emotion varies those fields in more or less intricate fashion, and everyone should know that, too. Now, it is possible to conceive a mind which can sense these changing fields and even resonate with them. That is, a special organ of the cerebrum can exist which can take on whatever field pattern it may detect. Exactly how it would do this, I have no idea, but that doesn't matter. If I were blind, for instance, I could still learn the significance of photons and energy quanta, and it could be reasonable to me that the absorption of a photon of such energy could create chemical changes in some organ of the body, such that its presence would be detectable. But of course, I would not be able, thereby, to understand color. Do all of you follow? There was a firm nod from Anthor. A doubtful nod from the others.
Such a hypothetical mind-resonating organ, by adjusting itself to the fields emitted by other minds, could perform what is popularly known as reading emotion, or even reading minds, which is actually something even more subtle.
It is but an easy step from that to imagining a similar organ which could actually force an adjustment on another mind. It could orient with its stronger field the weaker one of another mind. Much as a strong magnet will orient the atomic dipoles in a bar of steel and leave it magnetized thereafter. I solved the mathematics of second foundationism in the sense that I evolved a function that would predict the necessary combination of neuronic paths that would allow for the formation of an organ such as I have just described. But unfortunately, the function is too complicated to solve by any of the mathematical tools at present known. That is too bad, because it means that I can never detect a mind worker by his encephalographic pattern alone. But I could do something else. I could, with Semmick's help, construct what I shall describe as a mental static device. It is not beyond the ability of modern science to create an energy source that will duplicate an encephalograph-type pattern of electromagnetic field. Moreover, it can be made to shift at complete random, creating, as far as this particular mind sense is concerned, a sort of noise or static which masks other minds with which it may be in contact. Do you still follow? Semmick chuckled. He had helped create blindly, but he had guessed, and guessed correctly. The old man had a trick or two left. Anthor said, I think I do. The device, continued Durrell, is a fairly easy one to produce, and I had all the resources of the Foundation under my control as it came under the heading of war research. And now, the mayor's offices and the legislative assemblies are surrounded with mental static. So are most of our key factories. So is this building. They are now somewhat obscured. Eventually, any place we wish can be made absolutely safe from the Second Foundation or from any future mule. And that's it. He ended quite simply with a flat-palmed gesture of the hand. Turbor seemed stunned. Then it's all over. Great Selden, it's all over. Well, said Durrell, not exactly. How? Not exactly. Is there something more? Yes. We haven't located the Second Foundation yet. What? Roared Anthor. Are you trying to say? Yes, I am. Calgan is not the Second Foundation. How do you know? It's easy, grunted Durrell. You see, I happen to know where the Second Foundation really is. Chapter 21. The Answer That Satisfied. Turbor laughed suddenly. Laughed in huge, windy gusts that bounced ringingly off the walls and died in gasps. He shook his head weakly and said, Greg Galaxy, this goes on all night. One after another, we put up our straw men to be knocked down. We have fun, but we don't get anywhere. Space. Maybe all planets are the Second Foundation. Maybe they have no planet, just key men spread on all the planets. And what does it matter, since Durrell says we have the perfect defense? Durrell smiled without humor. The perfect defense is not enough, Turbor. My mental static device is far from perfect, and even if it were, it is only something that keeps us in the same place. We cannot remain forever with our fists doubled, frantically staring in all directions for the unknown enemy. We must know not only how to win, but whom to defeat. And there is a specific world on which the enemy exists. Get to the point, said Anthor wearily. What's your information? Arcadia, said Durrell, sent me a message. And until I got it, I never saw the obvious. I probably would never have seen the obvious. Yet it was a simple message that went, "A circle has no end." Do you see?
No, said Anthor stubbornly, and he spoke quite obviously for the others.
A circle has no end, repeated Mun thoughtfully, and his forehead furrowed.
Well, said Durell impatiently, it was clear to me.
What is the one absolute fact we know about the second foundation, eh?
I'll tell you.
We know that Harry Seldon located it at the opposite end of the galaxy. Homer Mun theorized that Seldon lied about the existence of the Foundation. Peleus Anthor theorized that Seldon had told the truth that far, but lied about the location of the Foundation. But I tell you that Harry Seldon lied in no particular. That he told the absolute truth.
But what is the other end?
The galaxy is a flat, lens-shaped object. A cross-section along the flatness of it is a circle, and a circle has no end, as Arcadia realized. We, the first foundation, are located on Terminus at the rim of that circle. We are at an end of the galaxy by definition. Now follow the rim of that circle and find the other end. Follow it. Follow it. Follow it. And you will find no other end. You will merely come back to your starting point. And there you will find the second foundation.
There, repeated Anthor.
Do you mean here?
Yes, I mean here, cried Durell energetically. Why, where else could it possibly be? You said yourself that if the second foundationers were the guardians of the Seldon plan, it was unlikely that they could be located at the so-called other end of the galaxy, where they would be as isolated as they could conceivably be. You thought the Kalgan's distance was more sensible. I tell you that that is also too far. No distance at all is most sensible. And where would they be safest? Who would look for them here? It's the old principle of the most obvious place being the least suspicious. Why was poor Ebling Meese so surprised and unmanned by his discovery of the location of the second foundation? There he was, looking for it desperately in order to warn it of the coming of the mule, only to find that the mule had already captured both foundations at a stroke. And why did the mule himself fail in his search? Why not? If one is searching for an unconquerable menace, one would scarcely look among the enemies already conquered. So the mind masters in their own leisurely time could lay their plans to stop the mule, and succeeded in stopping him. Oh, it is maddeningly simple. For here we are with our plots and our schemes, thinking that we are keeping our secrecy, when all the time we are in the very heart and core of our enemy's stronghold. It's humorous. Anthor did not remove the skepticism from his face.
You honestly believe this theory, Dr. Durell?
I honestly believe it.
Then any of our neighbors, any man we pass in the street, might be a second foundation Superman, with his mind watching yours and feeling the pulse of its thoughts.
Exactly.
And we have been permitted to proceed all this time, without molestation.
Without molestation. Who told you we were not molested? You yourself showed that Mun has been tampered with. What makes you think that we sent him to Kalgan in the first place entirely of our own volition? Or that Arcadia overheard us and followed him on her own volition?
Ha!
We have been molested without pause, probably. And after all, why should they do more than they have? It is far more to their benefit to mislead us than merely to stop us. Anthor buried himself in meditation and emerged therefrom with a dissatisfied expression. Well then, I don't like it. Your mental static isn't worth a thought. We can't stay in the house forever, and as soon as we leave, we're lost with what we now think we know. Unless you can build a little machine for every inhabitant in the galaxy.
Yes, but we're not quite helpless, Anthor. These men of the Second Foundation have a special sense which we lack. It is their strength and also their weakness. For instance, is there any weapon of attack that would be effective against a normal, sighted man which is useless against a blind man?
Sure, said Mun promptly. A light in the eyes.
Exactly, said Durrell. A good, strong, blinding light.
Well, what of it? Asked Turbor.
But the analogy is clear.
I have a mind static device. It sets up an artificial electromagnetic pattern, which to the mind of a man of the Second Foundation would be like a beam of light to us. But the mind static device is kaleidoscopic. It shifts quickly and continuously, faster than the receiving mind can follow.
All right, then.
Consider it a flickering light, the kind that would give you a headache if continued long enough. Now intensify that light or that electromagnetic field until it is blinding. And it will become a pain, an unendurable pain. But only to those with the proper sense, not to the unsensed.
Really? Said Anthor, with the beginnings of enthusiasm. Have you tried this?
On whom? Of course I haven't tried it, but it will work.
Well, where do you have the controls for the field that surrounds the house? I'd like to see this thing.
Here. Durrell reached into his jacket pocket. It was a small thing, scarcely bulging his pocket. He tossed the black, knob-studded cylinder to the other. Anthor inspected it carefully and shrugged his shoulders.
It doesn't make me any smarter to look at it.
Look, Durrell, what mustn't I touch? I don't want to turn off the house defense by accident, you know.
You won't, said Durrell, indifferently.
That control is locked in place. He flicked at a toggle switch that didn't move.
And what's this knob?
That one varies rate of shift of pattern. Here, this one varies the intensity. It's that which I've been referring to.
May I? Asked Anthor with his finger on the intensity knob. The others were crowding close.
Why not? Shrugged Durrell. It won't affect us. Slowly, almost wincingly, Anthor turned the knob, first in one direction, then in another. Turbor was gritting his teeth, while Mun blinked his eyes rapidly. It was as though they were keening their inadequate sensory equipment to locate this impulse, which could not affect them. Finally, Anthor shrugged and tossed the control box back into Durrell's lap.
Well, I suppose we can take your word for it.
But it's certainly hard to imagine that anything was happening when I turned the knob.
But naturally, Peleus Anthor, said Durrell with a tight smile. The one I gave you was a dummy.
You see, I have another. He tossed his jacket aside and seized a duplicate of the control box that Anthor had been investigating, which swung from his belt.
You see, said Durrell, and in one gesture turned the intensity knob to maximum.
And with an unearthly shriek, Peleus Anthor sank to the floor. He rolled in his agony, whitened, gripping fingers, clutching and tearing futilely at his hair. Mun lifted his feet hastily to prevent contact with the squirming body, and his eyes were twin depths of horror. Semic and Turbor were a pair of plaster casts, stiff and white. Durell, somber, turned the knob back once more. And Anthor twitched feebly once or twice and lay still. He was alive, his breath racking his body. "Lift him onto the couch," said Durell, grasping the young man's head. "Help me here." Turbor reached for the feet. They might have been lifting a sack of flour. Then, after long minutes, the breathing grew quieter, and Anthor's eyelids fluttered and lifted. His face was a horrid yellow. His hair and body was soaked in perspiration, and his voice, when he spoke, was cracked and unrecognizable. "Don't," he muttered. Don't do that again. You don't know. You don't know. Oh. It was a long, trembling moan. "We won't do it again," said Durell, "if you will tell us the truth. You are a member of the Second Foundation." "Let me have some water," pleaded Anthor. "Get some, Turbor," said Durell. "And bring the whiskey bottle?" He repeated the question after pouring a jigger of whiskey and two glasses of water into Anthor. Something seemed to relax in the young man. "Yes," he said wearily. "I am a member of the Second Foundation." "Which," continued Durell, "is located on Terminus. Here?" "Yes, yes. You are right in every particular, Dr. Durell." "Good. Now explain what's been happening this past half year. Tell us." "I would like to sleep," whispered Anthor. "Later. Speak now." A tremulous sigh. Then words, low and hurried. The others bent over him to catch the sound. "The situation was growing dangerous. We knew that Terminus and its physical scientists were becoming interested in brainwave patterns, and that the times were ripe for the development of something like the mind static device. And there was growing enmity toward the Second Foundation. We had to stop it without ruining Selden's plan. We tried to control the movement. We tried to join it. It would turn suspicion and efforts away from us. We saw to it that Kalgan declared war as a further distraction. That's why I sent Mun to Kalgan. Stedden's supposed mistress was one of us. She saw to it that Mun made the proper moves. Kalia is," cried Mun, but Durell waved him silent. Anthor continued, unaware of any interruption. "Arcadia followed. We hadn't counted on that. Can't foresee everything. So Kalia maneuvered her to Trantor to prevent interference. That's all. Except that we lost. You tried to get me to go to Trantor, didn't you?" asked Durell. Anthor nodded. "Had to get you out of the way. The growing triumph in your mind was clear enough. You were solving the problems of the mind static device. Why didn't you put me under control?"
"Couldn't. Couldn't. Had my orders. We were working according to a plan. If I improvised, I would have thrown everything off. Plan only predicts probabilities. You know that. Like Selden's plan." He was talking in anguished pants and almost incoherently, his head twisted from side to side in a restless fever. "We worked with individuals, not groups. Very low probabilities involved. Lost out. Besides, if control you, someone else invent device. No use. Had to control times. More subtle. First speaker's own plan.
Don't know all angles. Except, didn't work, He ran down. Darrell shook him roughly.
You can't sleep yet. How many of you are there?
Huh? What'd you say? Oh, not many. Be surprised. 50? Don't need more. All here on Terminus? 5, 6 out in space. Like Callia. Can't sleep.
He stirred himself suddenly as though to one giant effort, and his expressions gained in clarity. It was a last attempt at self-justification, at moderating his defeat.
Almost got you at the end.
Would have turned off defenses and seized you. Would have seen who was master.
But you gave me dummy controls.
Suspected me all along.
And finally, he was asleep.
Turbor said in awed tones,
How long did you suspect him, Darrell?
Ever since he first came here, was the quiet response.
He came from Clyze, he said.
But I knew Clyze, and I knew on what terms we parted. He was a fanatic on the subject of the Second Foundation, and I had deserted him. My own purposes were reasonable, since I thought it best and safest to pursue my own notions by myself. But I couldn't tell Clyze that, and he wouldn't have listened if I had. To him, I was a coward and a traitor, perhaps even an agent of the Second Foundation. He was an unforgiving man, and from that time, almost to the day of his death, he had no dealings with me. Then suddenly, in his last few weeks of life, he writes me, as an old friend, to greet his best and most promising pupil as a co-worker and begin again the old investigation. He was out of character. How could he possibly do such a thing without being under outside influence? And I began to wonder if the only purpose might not be to introduce into my confidence a real agent of the Second Foundation.
Well, it was so. He sighed and closed his own eyes for a moment.
Semek put in hesitantly, What will we do with all of them? These Second Foundation fellas.
I don't know, said Darrell, sadly. We could exile them, I suppose. There's Zoranol, for instance. They can be placed there and the planet saturated with mind static. The sexes can be separated, or better still, they can be sterilized. And in 50 years, the Second Foundation will be a thing of the past. Or perhaps a quiet death for all of them would be kinder.
Do you suppose, said Turbor, we could learn the use of this sense of theirs? Or are they born with it, like the mule?
I don't know. I think it is developed through long training, since there are indications from encephalography that the potentialities of it are latent in the human mind.
But what do you want that sense for? It hasn't helped them.
He frowned. Though he said nothing, his thoughts were shouting. It had been too easy. Too easy. They had fallen, these invincibles. Fallen like book villains, and he didn't like it. Galaxy. When can a man know he is not a puppet? How can a man know he is not a puppet? Arcadia was coming home, and his thoughts shuddered away
from that which he must face in the end. She was home for a week, then two, and he could not loose the tight check upon those